the temple. The temple was an important life, an important part of the Jewish faith, at the center of life in Jerusalem and the heart of all ancient Israel. The temple was the place where important events were marked, important personal events, important religious events, important national events. All parts of life and death intersected at the temple. This was all a very deliberate part of the development of the cult of Judaism. And by cult, I'm using that term in its technical sense, in the, of being a group expression of religious beliefs and practice, in the same way that we are a part of the Christian cult. The priests and prophets of the Jewish faith had made a point over generations of making the temple a focal point and condemning the common practice of making altars and worshipping, quote unquote, in the high places, to the point where there was a split between the temple believers and those who worshipped elsewhere that resulted in the emergence of the Samaritan nation, something which we will see reflected in the stories and the teaching of Jesus as we go through this year, but more on that another time. For now, we have readings which, reflecting this Feast of the Presentation, have decided to focus on the second part of the title of today's feast, the Presentation of Christ in the Temple. The place where Jesus is presented at 40 days old. Yes, we are already 40 days after Christmas. That gives you however many days till next Christmas. I'm not doing the math. Well, it's actually 39. We've transferred the feast day by one day. The temple. The temple was far from a quiet, reflective place. It was a place of activity, of multiple fires and greasy smoke from the animals sacrificed and burned there day and night. There were groups of scholars and scribes in discussion. I think discussion might be a gentle way of describing it. There were families marking important events with sacrifices, poor families such as Jesus's family being given the alternative of small offerings, a pair of turtle doves rather than a full lamb. The temple was alive and it was vibrant. There were quieter areas in the courts, but on the whole, the place was a hive of activity. The first reading that we heard this evening from the prophet Haggai was written when Israel was in exile and the first temple, Solomon's temple, had been destroyed. It contains words of comfort, letting the few people left in Jerusalem know that as the remnant, they would know that a greater temple would come and Israel would be restored to its former glory. It was a promise of hope. It's from a time when the temple was particularly the place where the divine presence, the Shekinah glory, was located. That approach of believing that God was located in the temple would change and adapt as the exiles returned home, with their understanding of God remaining present with them in foreign lands. And then that would go on to develop and broaden with the understanding of synagogues being places where the people of God could gather, and even more so after the destruction of the great temple in 70 CE and the exponential growth of rabbinical Judaism that followed that diaspora. Jesus, the rabbi, hints at this too, when in today's readings he describes his own body as a temple. It's a train of thought that locates the divine spirit within us and celebrates the precious nature of bodies, even lumpy and aging bodies. And for me, it is the root of Christian faith as an incarnational faith, a faith with feet on the ground and a heart for human beings, particularly for those in need. I spoke this morning on the importance in my own journey of incarnational theology, of an embodied faith. In my way of seeing the world, it informs much of what I do and say. And in the story related to today's celebration, today's feast, Mary and Joseph go to the temple in Jerusalem to offer their sacrifice for ritual purification. They're also going for the ritual of redemption of their firstborn son as required by Jewish law. But essentially they were going because they were ritually unclean, particularly Mary. And it's important that we know what that means, because we in the West have warped this idea of purification by considering bodies dirty and bodily things dirty, especially feminine bodies. Tied in with patriarchy and misogyny, it's been the cause of great harm and continues to be a cause of great harm within and beyond the church and the cultures the church influenced. In Jewish thought, as I said in a recent sermon, things that were ritually unclean were those things that weren't dirty, but they were in a liminal space, the in-between times, the things of life and death. So a woman having given birth was ritually unclean because she had stood at the threshold of new life and death. Just as she was unclean when menstruating, as blood was part of the life force. Those who touched dead bodies were ritually unclean because they had encountered the great power of death. And there were rituals to be performed in order to be reinstated in the worshipping community. Ritual uncleanness was not and is not a moral failing. It was not to do with being in any way inadequate. It was a recognition that these things of life and death were almost too sacred for the community to bear. And so those who experienced them had some time away from the common life and had rituals to perform in order that they could come back into community. As Christianity developed, it became obsessed rather than with ritual purity, but with some kind of moral purity, one which essentially saw bodies as imperfect and grubby and needing to be ignored as much as possible. And that's the legacy we are trying to move on from today. It's a legacy we need to move away from, for in our sacred texts, and indeed in the experience of being human, embodiment is something to be celebrated. Bodies are a gift and obviously an essential part of who we are, not just vehicles to move our brains around with. When we teach people to despise their bodies, and when we teach people to despise things bodily, and to look upon things as sexuality and gender identity as dirty or grubby and somehow imperfect, we create a culture and perpetuate a culture of harm, and risk deep psychological and, in many instances, physical violence on those who do not conform to a perceived norm. So I encourage us all, in the light of this love of bodies that we get from incarnation and from creation, to celebrate bodies in all shapes, sizes, sexualities, and genders, in order that we might learn again that we are each temples, each bearers of God's life and God's Spirit. Thanks be to God. Amen.